This is Predrag Vasic from the UN Department of Economic and Social Affairs. Climate-induced fires, rising inequalities, political unrest, a bleak economic forecast. Last year was a very turbulent one. How can we make sense of it? Does the world have to be this way? The UN Department of Economic and Social Affairs just released two major reports on the global economy and inequality. Here, the UN chief economist Elliot Harris and lead authors Marta Roig and Don Holland discuss the solutions to get us back on the right track.
Well, I would say that we're at the weakest spot that we've been in since the global financial crisis a decade ago. A lot of the risks that the global financial and economic community had been warning about, they have materialized or they haven't dissipated. We've had the trade disputes that have actually managed to slow global trade down to its lowest level of growth in the last decade as well, and that's taken away a lot of the confidence of the investor community. We've had a very loose and accommodating monetary policy stance that nonetheless hasn't been able to inspire investment because of this policy uncertainty. And all of that has been further complicated by a geopolitical situation that's becoming more and more tense, and again, contributing to policy uncertainty, as well as other issues like the rising debt levels that are becoming an increasing concern around the world. And our projections show that one in five countries are not going to have any growth in per capita income at all. So we have a rather dim prospect for the global economy looking forward, although we do see a certain improvement next year, provided these risks don't get any worse.
As Elliot has said, the risks and challenges of the current economic and social situation are not evenly spread, right? We are experiencing high levels of inequality, which we were also experiencing at the time of the economic crisis because, you know, social phenomena such as inequalities don't fluctuate as much, don't change as quickly as economic phenomena. But what happens now is that we are experiencing challenges that have just become more acute since the crisis and since before the crisis, right? Technological innovation is accelerating and brings a lot of opportunities, but it also brings challenges in terms of inequality. Climate change, the climate crisis has just worsened, and we continue, urbanization is growing. This is a time of change, and in a time of change, inequalities tend to grow. And the capacity of governments to address these inequalities is somewhat shrinking because the global economy is more integrated. So the question is, what can we do now to reduce these growing inequalities?
Well, I think that there is scope for government policy to be more finely aligned with the imperative of improving overall economic performance, but at the same time addressing some of the inequalities that have gotten worse. Of course, it is true that most governments do face constrained fiscal space. But within whatever fiscal space we have, we can encourage governments to be more assertive in directing their policies towards the sorts of investments that will mitigate some of the inequalities of access to opportunity, for example. So they can spend what money they do have on strengthening the quality of education and the access to education of all citizens, regardless of what group they belong to or where they might live. They can spend whatever money they have on infrastructure investments because that will set the foundation for private investments, which we have to have for our economies and our societies to transform towards sustainability. And above all, they must make an effort to increase the revenues that they do have, that they do generate, so that they can use those for expenditures, social expenditures and social protection that help cushion the impact of some of these inequalities that are continuing to get worse, and at the same time set the stage then for the transition, providing protection and support to those who would be adversely affected by the changes that will have to happen, so that overall there is a very clear line to public policy, a line that is consistent with the commitments that these governments have made towards sustainable development. And that is what is missing right now. Now, what I find particularly alarming is that we see on the private side, the private business sector, the private financial sector, an increasing willingness to embrace this sustainable development agenda, but the public policy hasn't kept pace with that. So that's one challenge that I think governments do face in the near future.
I think that's public policy is not well aligned with the goals that we need to achieve. I mean, you can apply that to climate policy, environmental policy as well. You only have to look around the world and see that the subsidies that are in place that continue to support the use of fossil fuels are more than double the size and magnitude of the subsidies that are in place to support renewable energy. So policy is operating in the opposite direction of what we need it to be to encourage the transition to a cleaner energy mix.
And that transition to the cleaner energy mix is a good case in point. It's necessary for the climate change agenda. And we will not succeed in that agenda unless we collaborate. And there are certain things that just cannot be done by individual countries. Climate change action is one of them. International trade is another. We won't resolve our international trade disputes acting unilaterally. We need to have the multilateral system. That's why it was created in the first place. And we also need to think about how we can use global cooperation to facilitate the flow of finance for the Sustainable Development Agenda. There needs to be a tremendous amount of investment in the new technologies that will transform our structures. But that investment will only flow if there's a collaborative and predictable environment across borders that makes it clear that this is the investment direction that should be followed. And I do think that the global collaboration, that recommitment to the spirit of multilateralism, is one of the biggest challenges we face, but is also one of the solutions that we will find to the challenges that we all confront.
Many of the policies that are necessary to address issues such as inequality and climate change are not necessarily popular. That's one thing. Increasing taxation is not something that is popular with the general public, right? That's one. And it's also that the people who may benefit from many of these policies don't have as much of a voice in affecting regulation as they should. Okay, so there's a need to maybe inform or change the mentality and give a voice to the people who can benefit the most from those policies. That's an important issue to do, right? Understand that there are challenges to these policies being implemented and acting on these challenges.
I think that's entirely right. I mean, we're talking about some very deep-reaching changes that have to happen. And some of these policies will be unpopular if they're not properly understood. And I do think that there's a need for governments around the world to engage in a dialogue with their peoples to explain what are the challenges that we have to confront, how do we decide collectively, jointly, what needs to be done, and how do we support the policies that have to be put in place, some of which might seem to be difficult choices at the outset. So Marta talked about taxation, that's one of them. We have, and Dawn talked about the fossil fuel subsidies. It's a political decision to decide what types of taxation to follow, to decide where to spend public money in subsidizing what type of activity. And there will always be those who benefit now from the present situation who will fight to prevent change. And I think one key message is important. The changes are inevitable. They will happen. There will come a time where we will no longer be burning fossil fuel. But the longer we put off the transition, the more abrupt and disruptive the change will be. And that, too, is a political message that has to be communicated.
We've already delivered some rather dismal views on the world economy to start with. And you know, last year, we came off the back of the world's worst economic performance in a decade. So we would hope that there's only one way to go, which would be up. But there's still all of these risks in the world economy, and in many countries, we're still trying to catch up just to the levels of income where we were 5 years ago, or even further in some cases. So it doesn't paint a very smooth picture looking ahead, but just to throw in a few positives, there are some parts of the world that have been showing some strong improvements. We've seen poverty levels decline dramatically in parts of East and South Asia over the last decade. And we've been seeing some, in fact, some of the least developed countries have shown an acceleration in growth over the last year, sort of bucking the global trend. The countries that are in most need of development progress actually were less affected by the global trade tensions than most of the rest of the world.
I see a very positive silver lining out there behind all of these gray clouds, and that is the private sector. I am very enthusiastic and very encouraged by some of the developments that we've seen in private finance in particular, but also in the private business community just in the last 6 to 8 months. We've had in September the launch of what we call the Global Investors for Sustainable Development Alliance. That is a group of CEOs of major companies who've come out and said that they will invest in sustainable projects around the world as they find them. We've had the Principles of Responsible Banking, where 148 banks with $47 trillion of assets have come together and set out principles that they will use in guiding their lending decisions to support sustainable development. We've had a series of declarations, the Net Zero Asset Owners Alliance. These are major institutional investors who said that they commit to making their asset portfolio carbon neutral by year 2050 and encouraging the companies in which they own shares to make those changes. And these are extremely large, very valuable firms. Now, all of those commitments show that they have recognized, all of these various actors, that sustainability is not only good for business, it is good business. And this is therefore a sign that there's no contradiction between doing what is right for the future and doing what is good for business. That is a message, I think, that can encourage policymakers to be more courageous. And we've seen just, what was it, last week or 10 days ago, that Larry Fink made a very assertive statement about the future of the world of finance. And we've seen the chairman of Goldman Sachs making a commitment on the part of his company to massive investments in sustainable projects. Now, if these players, these really important players, do not see an economic or commercial problem in sustainability, I think that should give governments comfort to take the policies and the decisions that are necessary to advance this agenda even more rapidly.
I agree with Elliot in that the number of stakeholders has expanded. It's not a matter of government anymore. And then in many ways, other stakeholders are leading the way and pushing governments to do more and better. I wanted to go back to your broader question, which is the dismal picture on the SDGs. I think we shouldn't be as pessimistic. We are doing better in many ways. The world is moving further. People are more educated. They are, in many countries, healthier. They are more connected than ever before, right? The problem when we look at the social aspect of this is that progress has been unevenly shared, right? So there are many people that for many reasons feel or are being left behind. That's where we have to, the problem is inequality, but not that we are not making progress in many areas, because socially we are.
One of the key things in order to revive the world economy is to reduce the level of uncertainty that we're facing. How do we do that? So there's three main channels that I can think of that I think would help to create a clearer, more certain environment, which is to ease global trade tensions, to reduce geopolitical frictions, and to clarify and commit to environmental policies. These would create a much more stable environment going forward, which would encourage firms to take long-term decisions, expand their investment, think long-term so that they can invest in these key areas that are needed to meet our development goals going forward.
Best case scenario, governments start to listen to the concerns that people have and start to act on them. I think one of the roots of the ongoing protest right now is that people feel, in addition to, of course, the insecurities that they have right now, people feel that they don't have equal opportunities, right? That whatever they do, they don't have the same opportunities as, say, children who are born in better off households and so on. So there has to be an effort to provide better opportunities. How do you do that? You start acting on when children are little, in early life, right? You have to provide quality education to every child since the time they were born, since the time they are little, and so on. Right now, the educational system is actually, in some cases, not leveling the playing field, but actually increasing inequalities, right? So there has to be investment in good education for all children. That has to be funding for healthcare, and all these investments that eventually will lead to people feeling that they have more equal opportunities to succeed and to move on and to do better than their parents, which is the problem right now. All policies are linked to each other, right? So you cannot have better opportunities if you don't have the resources to fund this education and health systems and so on. So that is where taxation is necessary, right? And And so everything is linked. And labor market policies that give people a decent wage, because you don't do anything with an education if you don't have access to a job that gives you a decent wage, and so on. So it's a whole package of policies that work together, not separately from each other. But in essence, having better and more equal opportunities will address some of the discontent that people are feeling right now.
Well, I agree with that. I think that I would say there would be two other aspects, two elements I'd add on to that mix. One is that it would be very helpful in setting up these predictable policies that governments publicly and officially recommit themselves through their policies to the Sustainable Development Agenda, to the Paris Agreement, to the things that they have promised to deliver for their citizens, and that they say that they will make these changes in their policies in a way that is consistent with those objectives. The second thing that I think would be a best case scenario is that we learn from the lessons of this trade imbroglio that we've had for the last year and a half or 2 years, and realize that our real interest lies in the multilateral approach, that it is always going to be beneficial to us all in the short term and in the longer term if we preserve the ability to work together. If we have a dispute, we try to resolve the dispute within the multilateral trading system that is designed to deal with that. I think that that is one of the reasons for our success over the last half a century. Globally, we've made a lot of progress, and a lot of that progress has been due to our willingness to collaborate with each other. And we've lost a little bit of that commitment. I think we have to really reaffirm the spirit of multilateralism and the willingness to cooperate with our neighbors, because it's in our own interests now and into the future.